All right, let's roll right into this morning. We've got a lot to do, we've got a lot to cover, so we are not going to waste any time. Our speaker this morning is, let's see, where'd Mara go?
Here.
Oh, you're over here, okay. Help me pronounce your last name.
Schreier Fleming.
Mara Schreier Fleming, thank you very much, is president of Best Selling. She works with business and sales professionals who want to sell more and shorten their sales cycle. She is author of Real World Selling for Out of This World Results, Monday Morning Sales Tips, and writes several columns, including the Insurance Record and AllBusiness.com. Her selling column appears in the Dallas, Houston, and Austin business journals. She's been quoted in the New York Times, Selling Power, and Entrepreneur. She is Mobil Oil's first female engineer in the U.S. and one of Chevron's top five salespeople in the U.S. So, if you will welcome Mara here this morning, she is going to talk about how to read the interviewer, your interviewer.
Thank you. Picture this. You're at your next interview, and you're totally confident because you know not only what to do, what to say, but how to say it so that you become the preferred candidate. Is that something you'd like to have happen? Yay! Good. Good, because you're in the right place. I'm going to show you how to read your interviewer so that you can become the preferred candidate during that interview and after that interview. So what we're going to do is start by talking about why we could even do that. Why you can read an interview and a interviewer. Because you know why? Behavior is predictable. And I'm going to attempt to demonstrate that here, so we'll see how predictable you are. And then the most important thing, to be likable in an interview, and you know that's very important in an interview, you've got to be able to strategically build rapport with the interviewer. And I'm going to show you what it is and how to do it. And in order to do that, you've got to pay attention to the interviewer. There are clues that your interviewer is giving you. Many people don't know what these clues are. I will show you what these clues are, what they mean, and how to use them. So you're going to have to pay attention. And to organize these clues, we're going to look at just two dimensions of behavior, and then we'll use them in the interview. So, does that sound like a plan?
Sure, yeah.
Good, because that's the one I got. Okay, so I said behavior is predictable, and I'm going to attempt to demonstrate that here. There are three questions. I want you to think of your answers. You can write them down, whatever you feel like doing. But pick your favorite number between 1 and 10. Pick your favorite color. And pick your favorite flower. Does everybody have those answers? Okay. Now look around the room as I ask for the answers. And if you answered these answers, raise your hand. So for the first question, how many people picked 3 or 7? Show of hands. Ooh, gee, she's clairvoyant. Second question, how many people picked either blue or red? Show of hands. Okay. And the last one, how many people picked the rose? Show of hands. Okay. Now, if you raised your hand to any one of those answers, let's see how many hands go up. So if you either did 3 or 7, oh, gee, look, almost everybody here. So now, are you wondering, how did she know that? Well, do you think now because behavior is predictable? Well, I'll show you how I knew those answers. Yes, behavior is predictable because we make choices that are meaningful to us. Now, if you look at the first question, I said 3 and 7. 3 is a symbol of the Trinity. And unconsciously, that resonates with people. Now, I speak at a lot of conferences. I work with sales professionals. A lot of conferences in Las Vegas. So now, if you know what goes on in Las Vegas, what is a very symbolic number there? 7. Yes. And it's really kind of funny there because when I ask this, you see the sea of hands go up for 7. But they're, of course, praying for 7. So, so that is why I knew with a large enough group of people, you would pick the numbers 3 and 7. They're meaningful to you. Now, for the second question, your preferred color. Take a guess. What do you think is the most preferred color by men and women in America today? Take a guess. Blue is 1, red is 2. So I figured with enough people, those would be the colors you prefer. And for the last question, the preferred flower, I hate to tell you this, but most guys, the only flower they know is the rose. So with enough people, I knew that those would be the choices you make. So do you believe behavior is predictable? It is predictable, and you can predict the behavior of your interviewer. So let's start talking about how you're going to do that. In order to predict behavior and use this, your job is to build rapport with the interviewer. And this is what rapport is. It's this ability to relate to a person in a way that you create an environment of trust and understanding. If you ever know successful salespeople, this is the skill they have. And many times you ask them, well, how do you do it? And they won't know how. But I'll show you how they do it, because your job is to pay attention to some of these clues and use them. So, you've all experienced rapport. Have you ever met somebody new in those first couple of seconds you think, gee, I really like that person? That's rapport. That's obviously what you want the interviewer to think about you. And then the opposite of rapport is when you meet somebody and you think, gee, you know, I'm not so comfortable with that person. That is a lack of rapport. And in both cases, when you think about, gee, why did I like that person and why did I not feel so comfortable with that person, you are making those decisions based on things you could see, just like the interviewer is. So what I'll do is I'll show you what some of those clues are. Now, there's something else you need to know about rapport, and that is that we are comfortable with people who we perceive to be like ourselves. So when you're working with the interviewer, your job is to notice the clues, know what they mean, and then use those clues so that you are perceived to be like that interviewer. So when you talk about rapport, know that it is your job to build rapport with the interviewer, not the other way around. So you're going to have to make some modifications to your behavior, especially in those first couple of minutes. But that's really what we're talking about. When you build this rapport, at the beginning, stress levels go down. The interviewer begins to like you. This is a good thing, and that's what you want in the interview. Now, if you're thinking about why is it so important to have rapport? Well, I told you what the definition of it is. We're building trust with somebody else. Now, I want you to think of someone who you trust. Could be a friend, could be someone in your family, could be someone you worked with. Do you have somebody in your mind who you trust? Okay, now, do you like that person? Absolutely. It is almost impossible to dislike someone who we trust. Now, here's where it gets interesting. You look at all the persuasion research, and there's tons of it out there. But if you look at the persuasion research, here's what it says. We tend to comply, we tend to do what the person we like asks us to do. So when someone likes you and they ask you to do something, or when you like them, they ask you to do something, you're going to do it. So you see, the rapport process is getting someone to trust you, which means that they're going to like you, and then they will tend to comply with what you want, which is you want the job. So they tend to perceive that they like you. So that's what it's all about, and that's why it's so important. So you're ready to learn how to do it?
Yeah.
Yay, okay. So I said we're going to be gathering some clues. To make it easier to gather these clues, we're going to look at two dimensions of behavior, assertiveness and responsiveness. And when we talk about assertiveness on this dimension, this is how other people see you as being forceful or directive over people or situations. So this is the degree that other people see us influencing the thoughts and actions of others. Now, I'm an engineer, and most people think we're robotic, but we're not all that robotic. There are assertiveness levels. Let's just say on a scale of a 1 to 10, some people are 1 on assertiveness, some are 3s and 5s and 7s. It's varying degrees. But for the sake of using this in an interview, we're just going to make two categories. And we're going to say that people are either more assertive or less assertive. It's not better or worse. It's just different. And you are going to do different things depending on whether you perceive the interviewer to be more assertive or less assertive. Okay? And you are primarily more assertive or less assertive. Okay? Now remember when I said we're comfortable with people who we perceive to be like ourselves? Remember I said that? So you go into an interview and you perceive the interviewer to be more forceful, more assertive. What are you going to do? Are you going to be like that interviewer and adapt a couple of behaviors to be more assertive? Yes, that would be correct. Remember, we're comfortable with people like ourselves. Your job is to be perceived to be like that interviewer. Okay, so the next dimension of behavior is responsiveness. And this is how other people see us being forced, this is how other people perceive us to feel comfortable when we show our feelings or when we hide our feelings. Now, on this dimension, just like assertiveness, there are various degrees of responsiveness out there. But you know what? Let's just make two categories again. And you would think that we refer to people as being more responsive and less responsive, but that would be too easy. In the literature, it's more responsive. These are the people who are showing feelings. And more controlled, these are the people who are less comfortable doing that, so they tend to hide their feelings. And in an interview, you're going to notice people, the interviewer, either more responsive or more controlled. You are primarily either more responsive or controlled. So if you notice you have a more controlled interviewer, this is the person who's less comfortable showing feelings, what are you going to be like? More responsive or more controlled? That's right. You're going to get that job. Very good. Very good. Okay, ready for some clues?
Sure.
Okay, first thing, typically in an interview, you're going to shake somebody's hand. Now, you probably have noticed if you've shaken more than two hands in your lifetime, you get everything from the bone crusher all the way down to the fish. Right? And we don't like the fish. So, and by the way, just so that you know how important that handshake is. Fishes are inappropriate, and especially for the guys, sometimes they shake women's hands with just the ends of the fingertips. As a female, let me tell you guys, creepy, don't do that. It's not a good thing. It's this is called the web. It's web to web, pump, pump, you're done. That's it. No this, no that, no. Okay, so remember, rapport is really important. That's the first thing you're going to do. So, your handshake. Who do you think is more assertive? Bone crusher or fish? Bone crusher. So you've got your very first clue. And what I say is using these clues, it's not like you're going to say, that's one clue. Now I know who that person is. However, there is Mora's rule. When they break your hand, you're going to see a whole lot more assertive clues. But try to gather as many clues as you can, because we are people, not machines, and we're going to find that, and you're going to find that people are primarily one or the other. You'll see more clues on the more assertive dimension, maybe a few less assertive clues, but judge it that way. So pay attention to your clues and gather them. But remember Mora's rule with a bone crusher. And by the way, men and women both will break your hand. It's not just a gender thing with the guys. So just notice that. So that's your first clue. Pay attention to that. Next is voice volume. How many of you will be talking with your interviewer on the phone before you meet? Show of hands, how many? Very good. You can start gathering clues so you can prepare your interviewing strategy on the phone, just hearing their voice. You will get two clues on the assertiveness dimension on the telephone and one clue on the responsiveness dimension on the phone. So this is their volume, how loud people talk. And have you noticed that some people tend to talk a little louder and some people tend to talk a little softer? Who do you think's more assertive?
Louder,
yes. Now, I have a mic. If I didn't have a mic, figure out what my voice is. What would you say, louder or softer?
Louder,
yes. So I have a louder voice. You could shake my hand, you'd have one clue about me. You hear my voice, you have another clue about me. So that's a more assertive clue about me. And if you were interviewing with me, and if you had a softer voice, one of your strategies could be, I need to increase the volume a little bit. Because she's more assertive, I need to be perceived to be like her. Okay? So, you listen to my voice, you got one clue about me. Voice pace, how quickly people talk. Yes, I am a Yankee. Yankees tend to talk faster than Southerners. And there are some people who tend to talk slower. And if I were to talk like this for the rest of the program, how many of you would be bolting for the door? That's rapport. We're comfortable with people like ourselves. And doesn't it drive you nuts if you like to hear fast and the other person is talking slow? That's what happens. And you see, think about it the other way. If you like to talk slow and you're hearing 90 miles an hour, that's driving you nuts. That's what the interviewer is experiencing. So I want you to pay attention to the pace. What's my pace? Fast or slow?
Fast.
90 miles an hour, yes. And by the way, you know, yes, there are regional differences. And the fastest talking person I ever heard was a Southerner from Mississippi, and she was talking faster than me. So you can calibrate a little bit for regional differences, but you know, don't let that be the overwhelming thing. Just listen to that particular voice and judge accordingly. So you now have a couple clues about me on assertiveness. Here's another one, eye contact. Have you noticed that some people are very comfortable making consistent eye contact with you? And other people, when you look at them, they're looking up, they're looking down, they're looking every place else but at you. Have you noticed that? Okay, that is somebody who is less comfortable making consistent eye contact. So who do you think is more comfortable making the eye contact? A more assertive person or a less assertive person? More assertive. So if you're interviewing with an interviewer who is a less assertive person, don't go laser beaming them. It's not a good idea. They will be very uncomfortable. And you know, you're in an interview, depending on whether you have a pad or something to write in, that is one way of very graciously avoiding the eye contact, because you would make eye contact, and you should make some, but you're going to gauge it. How does that interviewer feel comfortable with eye contact? Less or more? And then you just can write and look up and look down again. Okay? So that would be your strategy. And here's one you may not think is a clue. It is a clue. And this is what you would be listening for on the phone even before you get to the interview. It's how people make requests. Here's an example. Let's say somebody needed some copies. And so they said, I need some copies. Would you make me some copies? Okay, that's the request. That's one type of request. Here's another type. I need some copies. Go make me some copies, please. Do you hear a difference in those two? Okay, does anybody know what the difference was? What I do in...
Command.
Ask and tell, command and not. The first one was, would you make me some copies, is a request. Make me some copies is a command. Which do you perceive to be more forceful, more assertive? Command, yes. You know, in the military, they don't ask you, would you mind running 50 miles with that 25-pound pack? No, it's run. So that is a difference between an assertive person and a less assertive person. So you're going to be listening for how they make requests. We need to meet next Wednesday at 7, call me at Tuesday, or something like that. That is giving you a clue about whether they are more assertive or less assertive. So pay attention to those clues. And once you make your decision, you're going to go with your gut. And you're going to say, okay, I perceive this person to be more assertive. I'm going to develop some strategies, whether it's my volume will be a little louder, my pace will be a little faster, or whatever you may choose to do to be like that more assertive person. If they're a less assertive person, you're going to make that decision. Gee, I'm going to talk a little slower or softer, and whatever you choose to do. Now, I will tell you, in the world of sales, there are two predictors of success. One is optimism, the general belief that things will be okay, and in the world of sales, you need that. And then the other one is flexibility, the ability to do different things in different situations. You can see in sales, you're selling to different people. Your interviewing world, you are also interviewing with different people. And you've got to be able to adapt. So what I'm going to suggest to you, some of you are innately flexible, and others can practice so you can get better. Okay? And the practice does help. So practice on your friends, your family. I have my daughter would say to me sometimes, Mom, are you doing something to me? And I would say, if I were, you wouldn't know it. So just practice and you'll get better. Okay, so now you've got these clues. Let's talk about what they mean, because this is going to determine how you use them. The assertiveness dimensions tells you about decision making. Some people make decisions quickly. Some people take a long, long time. So it's because of this perception of risk. Some people are comfortable with risk. Think about the people that you know. Like if you were to say, let's go to lunch. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Where do you want to go? Oh, I don't know. That's what we're talking about risk here. The food could be bad. The service could be slow. All of that. So that's what I'm talking about, decision making and risk. And then the last thing that the assertiveness dimension tells us is about whether someone is going to be, you can expect them to be, direct with you. Here's what I mean. Direct is, you have a project you're working on, and you ask someone, what do you think about this? Direct is, I think it's great. Or, I think it stinks. That's pretty direct. Indirect is, what do you think about this? Well, it's nice. It doesn't tell you anything. So that's what I'm talking about when I say direct and indirect. So now think about this. We have got forceful people, assertive people. We have less forceful people, less assertive. Who do you think makes decisions quickly because they are comfortable with risk and you will expect them to be direct? Is that a more assertive person or a less assertive person? Absolutely. And this is what you would expect. So as you're interviewing, I want you to be able to use that. So you're in the interview. Someone that's able to make a decision, you would say, okay, when is the decision going to be made? How am I doing here? That requires a decision. They're going to be willing to take the risk to make that decision right there. They don't need a whole lot of time. Less assertive people need longer periods of time. So by the way, as you're talking in an interviewer, if you're at a point where they need to make a decision, if you're working with a less assertive interviewer, you got to give them more time. Don't you go pushing that decision fast. It will make them uncomfortable. And when we're talking about making someone uncomfortable, that breaks rapport. Rapport is when they like you. Lack of rapport is when they don't. So you want to avoid that. It's a bad thing, okay? Now, here's the other thing. In the world of sales, I say that when you're working with an assertive person, you can expect them to be direct with you, right? So if you are not using that, you are missing an opportunity. You're in that interview. There are some things you want to know. If you're working with a more assertive interviewer, you can ask direct questions. Why miss the opportunity? Use it to your advantage. So know who you're interviewing with and use it. So when I talk about an interview strategy, again, don't you push people who are less assertive to make a quick decision. That is not a good strategy. And use the fact that if you are talking with someone who is more assertive, be direct. It'll get you some answers. And I want the less assertive people in the room to know. When you're direct with an assertive person, they think nothing of it. Less assertive people will say, oh my God, I couldn't ask that. But for a more assertive person, they think nothing of it. So why would you not? It's okay. I give you all permission. It's okay. And know who will take risks. Think about your qualifications for a particular job. Let's say you're a little bit out of the bullseye that they're looking for. A more assertive person might consider you. That's a risk. Less assertive person, you're going to have to hone your interviewing strategy so that you are perceived more like what they're looking for. Because it would be risky on their part to pick someone who's out of those that kind of center point. So know that. And your job in the interview is to be prepared to help that interviewer address the perception of risk if you have to. Now, I'm going to show you on the responsiveness dimension how to do it. But no, with less assertive people, these are the ones, oh, I'm going to follow all the rules and the guidelines and I'm not going out of those boundaries. But you know what? If you know you want that job and you know you can do that job, it is your job to show that interviewer that you can be the perceived perfection. So I'll show you on the responsiveness mention. Okay? Any questions so far? You're thinking, your brain's going, ooh, I have some good strategies next time. Good, good, this is good. Confidence is what you're selling too, by the way. And when you're prepared and when you have a strategy, you will be more confident, which is a good thing in sales. Yes?
I heard you say that maybe to a assertive interviewer, you could ask them, how am I doing?
I don't know that I'd say directly. Well, actually, I might, depending on who that interviewer is. It would probably be, instead of how am I doing, it's, so far, what are you thinking my fit is with this job? You know, something like that. I would say it a little differently. But I could, yes.
Say you're a more assertive person and you land a job with a less assertive manager.
Question is, when you are a more assertive person, did you hear his voice volume? That would be a louder voice. Notice a little slower pace, though. So here's the deal. I'm reading you. So if you are a more assertive person working for a less assertive person, the question is, do those working relationships tend to work out? The answer is, it depends. You will work the way the less assertive manager wants, which means you're going to have to do some different things. You're not going to push them for decisions quickly. They don't like that. And I can speak from experience working for a manager. I'm fast, he was slow, I'm people, he's things. We were exact opposites. That guy drove me nuts. Who was getting the ulcer, him or me? I was. That's when I made this decision to say, you know what? I'm going to do some things differently. And I modified what I did and how I approached his decision making. After all, he was the manager. And he was in Houston, I was in Dallas, which is the only reason why I didn't leave the company. But I remember the first time I changed my strategy, and he said something like, that's a very good question. And I'm thinking he almost dropped the phone because he didn't expect it. Most of the time I was doing that, you know, over the phone. You're going to do this, this is how it's going to work. And he didn't like that. So we have to modify our behavior for our managers. And then it can be a better relationship. It's not going to be as easy as working for someone like you, but you can make it better and you can make it successful. Okay? Okay. Okay, let's move on to some responsiveness clues. So just to remind you, this dimension is how other people perceive us to be comfortable showing our feelings or hiding our feelings. And we tend to be one or the other. We tend to either be comfortable showing our feelings, that's a responsive person, or we tend to be comfortable hiding our feelings, that's a controlled person. It's not better or worse, it's just different. And you will have a different interviewing strategy whether you're talking to someone who's controlled or whether you're talking to someone who is responsive. So, first clue on responsiveness is facial expressions. There are 43 muscles in your face, and some people move them all. And other people, and I will tell you, this happened to me in a sales call. I had a customer, he was talking to me like this the whole time. Nothing on his face moved except his mouth, because that was the only way to get the words out. And I'm sitting there thinking, I mean, this could have been an interview, it was a sales call, but I'm sitting there thinking, I'm dying. He hates me. He's never going to buy. And he ended up buying. Now, that surprised me. I remember walking to my car in the parking lot thinking, wow, that was a weird sales call. How did that happen? And actually, you know, I did everything wrong. I didn't really realize this stuff. And he is the stoic, granite-faced guy. You know, Mount Rushmore had nothing on this guy. And I'm becoming more animated. Now, you know, from a rapport standpoint, was this right or wrong?
Wrong.
Big time wrong. And I got the order. I later learned, now this is when I worked for Mobil Oil, if you're running an industrial operation, a plant, a factory, you need industrial lubricants to make those machines go. This guy was having supply problems. I was the next lucky salesman to walk in the door. And Mobile Oil has great products, and so great products. He was desperate. He bought. I am sure he didn't like buying from me, but he desperately needed to buy from me. So that's what happened. So, you know, even in an interview, you can kind of blow it and get lucky if everything you offer is what they're looking for. But I would rather you not have to resort to luck. So I'd rather you go back to where you are. So you'll watch their facial expressions. Now, you've watched me. If you watch me longer than 2 seconds, you'll make a decision. Do I move my face or not?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Rubber face, yes. So if you're looking at an interviewer who has a face like mine, you know that would be a very obvious clue. Do you think the face people are the responsive ones or the controlled ones? Oh, yes, big time. What I had was an interview with a very controlled guy, and I should have become more controlled. And actually, that is one of my strategies, believe it or not, is to lose the face. And I can lose the face when I have to lose the face. So your strategy, if you are more responsive, is if you are with a responsive interviewer, keep the face. If you're with a controlled interviewer, lose the face. Okay? So you pegged me on one clue. How about hand movements? Some people talk with their hands. Do I talk with my hands? Yes. Other people, you will watch them. Their hands never move. I am in awe of those people. But that's what happens. You'll notice that. And who do you think is the responsive one? Flipper or no hands? Flipper, yes. I am Flipper. So what'll happen, though, I want you to watch your interviewer's hands. Because if you tend to be too much of Flipper, and the interviewer is very controlled, no hands, what they will end up doing is they're going to be looking at your hands. They will not be listening to you, but they will be focusing on your hands. This is not good in an interview. You want them to be listening and paying attention. And if your hands are so distracting, it's a bad thing. So watch how they use their hands. And I will just tell you my strategy in sales, because it may work in an interview situation if you're in an office, is to go low. Their desk is here. Your hands are here. If you're mute without your hands, they still can't see them flipping. But that's what you have to do. So just watch your hands. Can be very distracting. So if you have a table, you're lucky. If you're not, maybe sit on them. Good luck. So you have two clues about me, responsive. And here's another one. And this is the other thing that drove me a little crazy in that sales call with that guy that bought from me. Nonverbal feedback. Non is no. Verbal are the words. Feedback is sending and receiving information. So nonverbal feedback is sending and receiving information, but without words. What are some of the nonverbal communication you'd love to see in an interview? Yeah, that interview is nodding. That's a good thing. Now, just so that you know, in our culture, our nodding is perceived as very positive. In the Asian culture, a nod is not perceived the same way. It's just that I hear you. I'm listening to you. So understand what it is by the culture. Okay, well, with that said, so a nod would be something you'd like to see. What else might you want to see?
Smile.
Yeah, that's a great thing, and that's universal. Someone smiling, and just with teeth is a sincere smile. The old Jerry Seinfeld, that's not a sincere smile. Yeah, that's teeth. Okay, so that's what you're looking for. Now, no, some people are comfortable giving you nonverbal feedback, and others less so. So if you know who you can expect the nonverbal feedback with, you're going to be more comfortable during that interview. So who's going to give you the nonverbal feedback, responsive or controlled? Yes, responsive. And if you know that you're going to interview with someone who's very controlled, you're going to say, okay, I'm not going to expect a lot of the smiles and the nods. Now, I will say this. Pay attention to other nonverbal communication. Interest is what you're looking for in an interview. When we tend to like stuff, we keep it close. Think about a baby. When a baby is given food that the baby doesn't like, what does the baby do? Push it away. So distance, greater distance, is a bad thing. It's a lack of interest. If you've got a resume that you're giving an interviewer and the interviewer goes, great interview, wow, throws it away, not a good thing. You're looking for holding close, great interview. Great resume. Whoa, that's nice. So that sort of anything close is a nonverbal clue. So pay attention to the control people. That's what they're going to signal to you. And here's the other thing that I'm looking for. And again, this isn't a sales call, but you're the product now. So watch how they're facing you. Think of yourself, body position, as kind of like a dial. I am facing you. If we were interviewing, this would be a great position. If I'm the interviewer and you're the interviewee, and I'm going, like what you've done. You notice how my body position changed? The dial is facing away from you. It's not matching. That's not a good thing. You want to watch the change during the interview. So watch how they're facing you. And here's the thing. If what you're doing isn't working, is not working, do something different. So get the dial back. But that's what you would be looking for. Okay? Vocal tone. This is the one clue you're going to get on the phone on this dimension. And this is why in the world of sales, I'm always asking for, if the assistant says, do you want to leave a voicemail? I always say yes. Not that I do, but I want to hear that person's voice. So here are two different voicemails that you might hear. Hi, I'm out of my office. Please leave your name and number after the tone. I'll return your call as soon as I can. Wait for the beep. Do you hear that tonality there? Versus, hi, I'm out of my office. Would you please leave your name and your number after the tone, and I'll return your call as soon as I can. Thanks for calling, and have a nice day. Do you get that those are two very different people? Okay, so now the first one was very monotone. Second was more varied tone. Who do you think is more controlled? Monotone, yes. And it's very clear how you hear these voices. Monotones are more controlled, and the varied tones are more responsive. So you're going to go to that meeting prepared because you're going to be able to read that interviewer. So let's talk about what those clues mean. On the responsiveness dimension, it tells us whether someone is more comfortable with people or with things. It also tells us, now on the assertiveness dimension, it was the speed of making decisions. But on this dimension, it's how they make decisions. And when I said on the first dimension, on assertiveness, your job is to reduce their perception of risk. You need the responsiveness dimension to know how. So I'll show you how. And then time perspective. Now, you're never going to be late for any interview, please. However, some people view time more flexibly than others. Like 1 o'clock, 1:03, close enough for horseshoes. Versus somebody else who goes, no, 1 o'clock, 1:03, 3 is 3 minutes late. So that's a very different person and how they perceive time. So let's ask you, who do you think is more comfortable with people? And I'll give you the decision-making clue. If you were to buy a car, you could put a spreadsheet together, maybe 25 criteria, score each model that you're thinking about with a 4-decimal-place score, and get 1 metric per car, and get the car that has the highest score, right? That would be one way that some people do it. Here's another way. Hey, call up a friend. What kind of car you drive? Do you think I'd like it? That's the car I'm going to get. So the first one was very what? Fact, information, data driven. The second one was an opinion. Okay? So some people make fact decisions, some people make opinion decisions. And this time perspective is whether people are more flexible with time or more rigid with time. So let's talk about who you think is who. Is the person who is more comfortable with people and makes decisions based on opinions and is more flexible with time, is that the controlled person or the responsive person? Yeah, they're people, and they like to hear opinions to make their decision, and 1 o'clock, 1:03, it's okay, you got here, it's good enough. Versus the controlled person is, data-driven, things are more important to them than people, and they make decisions based on facts, data, information, and whether you're going to love it or not, they could care less because that is irrelevant, that's not fact. And time is very important to them in terms of whether they can be flexible with it or it's no. 1 o'clock means 1 o'clock. 1:03 is different than 1 o'clock. So you can see that those are very different people, and you're going to have to interview differently with the person, whether they are responsive or controlled. So here's the deal. You walk into that interview, and you recognize that you're interviewing with someone who's very controlled. There's a very technical term in the world of sales. It's called schmoozing. Are you going to schmooze the interviewer who's very controlled? No. And I want you to know that if you decide, if you do that and thinking that's a good strategy, it's not. They're thinking, he or she is wasting my time. Why are they doing that? And it's ding out. So your strategy is going to be, okay, do I need to get to know this person? Because responsive people do need to know a little bit about you. They in fact, want to build a little bit of a relationship before they can find out the other stuff. They need that to feel comfortable with you. And they're the ones, the responsive people, they want to hear opinions, who loves you, your clients, your peers, all that good stuff. Whereas the control people, they want to hear data. They want to hear that as a result of the projects you worked on, you contributed 80% productivity improvement to your organization. That's the language they speak. So you've got to have data for them that resonates. And know that when we talk about time, as I said, you'd never want to be late for anyone. But just know in an interview, this is a sales call. You are the product. You have an objective. The objective is to be perceived as the preferred candidate. And when you're working with responsive people, they sometimes get derailed with time. Oh, you're a runner. I'm a runner. Let's talk running. And you never get to the discussion of the job. Your job is to make sure if you're talking with someone who's responsive, that they don't spend all their time schmoozing with you. You have an objective to meet. You've got to get down to business. So when we talk about using this in an interview, I want you to pay attention to whether the person is responsive or whether the person is controlled. And your job is to create rapport, which means before the meeting, you're going to have a strategy of what to do in either case. Now, you are primarily responsive or more responsive or more controlled. You are primarily more assertive or less assertive. And as you hear the voice, if you're lucky enough to hear the voice of the person, make a decision, have a strategy, ready to go. And you're going to match their assertiveness and responsiveness level. Just pick whatever you see and start gathering the clues as you're going. And go with your gut, by the way. There is a neurological link from your gut to your brain. You know, prehistoric man saw a tiger. Didn't go, wait a second, I'm going to whip out the Excel spreadsheet to see which column you're in. I eat you, you eat me. Oh, got to go. No, that's not how it happened. It's gut reaction. So you go with your gut. It's telling you a lot of information. And if you think that it's a great interview, it is. Keep doing what you're doing. And if you have a gut feeling that I need to be doing something else, do something different. You know, just change your strategy a little bit. And when I say pick topics that are comfortable with them, you're talking to someone who's controlled. Don't be talking all that feeling stuff. They don't want to hear it. It's irrelevant. It just does not compute. So stay away from that. And if you're talking with someone who's responsive and you are controlled, you got to throw them something. I loved working with my team. You might want to put a little animation in there, but that would be appropriate. So get some people feeling stuff in there. So when we talk about using this, your job now is your homework assignment is to study the clues and practice on the people that you see every day. Make some decisions. Do I see them as more responsive, less, you know, controlled, more assertive, less assertive? And your plan, you're going to have to create for whichever type of person you're going to interview with. And then when you do it in the interview, go with it. Evaluate it, and then, as I said, go with your gut. And you're probably right. If you think it's going great, it probably is. Just keep doing it. So we've talked about persuasion and the fact that people are readable. Do you think you can read your interviewers now better than you could before? This is a good thing. Good. So your job is to build rapport. You now know the clues. You're going to use them. And those dimensions of behavior tell you a lot about your interviewer. So I want to encourage you to use them. And I'm going to ask, how many of you now think you have at least one new idea that you can apply so that you're more comfortable in your interviews? Yay! Good, good, good. Okay, good. And, you know, being interviewed, it's your opportunity to shine, and when you're confident, you will be perceived as the best candidate. So I want to leave you with this one last thought of this very famous and successful salesperson, Robert Louis Stevenson. Yes, that Robert Louis Stevenson said, everyone lives by selling something. You are selling yourself. You are a great product with your unique experiences and your expertise, and now you know how to sell it even more effectively. So good luck and best wishes for your next successful interview. Thank you.